right, the following comes to me, as you might imagine, unsigned, for a good reason. Doctor, I'm going to read you something. I'd like you to react to it, if you would.
Certainly.
Dear Art and Dr. Martin, in 1991, I made a pact with anyone that could get my girlfriend to come back. The response was by Satan. At that point, my eyes literally rolled back, and I heard only two words, 1 year. 1 year later, she broke up with me for no good reason. Several months later, I was asleep, had a dream that I was looking at myself in a mirror brushing my hair. When I looked at my eyes in the mirror, they turned totally black. The person was me, but the soul behind the eyes, evil. At that point, I knew exactly who it was, what I wanted, and how it got there. At this point, I was awake, tried to get up and turn on the lights, but was physically pushed back down to a prone position and could no longer move even a finger. To make matters worse, the bedroom door slammed shut, and I was cut off from the light in the hallway. What happened to this person?
This person accepted possession and was possessed and infested, and the demonic power took over. I'd love to know what happened subsequently. There's no doubt about it. It's a genuine. Everything there is genuine, unless it's copied from a book. But it's a genuine phenomena.
These things really happen. Doors slam shut.
They really happen. They do. But you see, the point is this: that the if you go to a doctor and tell him that, you know, he sends you to a shrink.
Sure.
But it doesn't help to go to a shrink with these things at all, unless the shrink knows what he's talking about and sends you off to an exorcist. And apropos of that, remember you also got a letter or a fax from somebody asking you to cease and desist from this conversation?
Correct.
I now know my reading of that is that their lifestyle is disturbed by being told the truth about demonic possession and harassment. To get back to this particular gentleman, I would love to know the result of, he won't tell us this time, perhaps some other time he will tell us what happened to him subsequently. Everything that's there sounds absolutely genuine.
Yes.
Has happened, is
yes.
Chronicled, is known to have happened to others, and is genuinely the effect of demonic infestation.
All right. One other, doctor. Could you tell us, please, more about what you believe may be seen in the sky? You said keep your eye on the sky. Between now and next spring, what should we be looking for? And then, as a matter of fact, before you answer that, also he says, can we obtain Dr. Martin's books?
Yes, they can.
You have many books. You've been a very prolific
16,
writer.
16, and I have one at the present moment called Windswept House, which is about the present condition of the Church of Rome and of the present Pope and what's going to happen shortly to both. Because people may not realize it, because of the flourishing condition of the church, apparently, we are in deep crisis in the Roman Catholic Church. And I'm a priest. I say Mass every morning. I baptize babies. I hear confession, etc. So I'm a traditional priest. But I know we're in deep doo-doo, in deep trouble. And this
so
book is about, that's my latest book, but it's only, this is the 16th book I've written.
It's called Windswept House.
That's right, published by Doubleday.
Doubleday. So your books are generally available in bookstores?
That's right, they are, or in paperback. This one is still not in paperback, it will be next year.
What, doctor, are ghosts?
Ghosts?
Yes, sir.
Genuine ghosts are visitations by people already dead who are allowed by God to visit the living for some reason or other, usually known to the person visited, but not admitted by them until they wake up. There are some cases where what we call ghosts is demonic infestation of a house or a city or a street. It does happen.
Have you had occasion where you have exorcised a spirit or a ghost or whatever it is from a house, from a structure?
In a house, yes. Going from room to room and expelling the demon. It must be done. I'll be doing that in December in Washington, D.C.
You are in your 70s.
That's
again,
right.
I ask you, concern about yourself, does there not come a time when physically you should refrain from doing this?
Yes, and I have refrained to a large extent. It's nothing like the febrile activity of my 40s and 50s and 60s. No, I haven't. Then I've had open heart surgery.
Oh, my.
And two heart attacks. So, you know, simply the nature of things has imposed a certain restraint on me.
Were either one of these heart attacks associated with exorcisms?
One of them was.
One of them was?
Yes, the bad one. But that's the price you pay. And art, you know, we're only here for a short time.
It is true. It is true. All right, let's go back to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Malachi Martin. Hi, where are you, please?
I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Fairbanks, Alaska. Yes, sir.
What's on your mind, sir?
Say again?
What's on your mind?
I have a question for you. I used to be involved in magic before I was a Christian.
Uh-huh.
And summoning demons and all that kind of strange stuff.
Yes.
The question I have for you, though, is now there's a person up here who is infested with them.
Who's in touch with what?
Demons. I mean, you can actually see it because some of the stuff he does.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, as a Christian, should I even attempt to cast them out or just leave them alone?
Oh, that's a good question.
It is. Unless you have special authority, don't touch it with a bud. Don't touch it. Keep away from it. Protect yourself. Don't attempt to deal with it.
Is that clear enough for you, caller?
Yeah, that's fine.
It's stronger than you. It's more intelligent than you.
Okay.
All right. Have a good morning and stay safe. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Malachi Martin. Hi.
Hi. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Like I said, I'm sorry I hadn't been listening this morning, but I am taping it for later listening.
Where are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm sorry?
Where are you?
I'm in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Right.
My name is Bill.
Art,
I got a question for you and also one for Dr. Martin.
Yes,
if I remember correctly, if you want to jog my memory here, you said that you had a story about a Ouija board which you would not dare tell.
That's right.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know about that. But
that's all I'm willing to say.
Hey, Dr. Martin, it's a pleasure and honor to speak with you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. I was listening to Art's show earlier, and I believe Sunday night you had a Dreamland thing where you had a seance. Is that correct, Art?
I have a recording. I didn't have a seance. I wouldn't do that. But I had somebody on who had conducted a seance, and in the course of that, there was the sound of babies crying.
Yeah.
And I played that on the air. Yes, indeed.
I recall, I believe a woman called in and said she heard a female voice in the background as well.
Yes.
But nonetheless, Dr. Martin, my question for you is just very simply, what is the role of a seance in the act of demonic possession?
And the role of the seance is chiefly this. It lays you open to invasion. Because the essence of a seance is the sitting or standing or lying down, it depends on what physical posture they take, and trying to communicate and to commune with the spirits. And that means opening the channels of your mind and will. And if you do that, you're sitting duck.
A sitting duck. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Malachi Martin. Hello.
Hi, this is Rita.
Yes, Rita.
I have a question. My sister-in-law that lives with us is mentally retarded.
Yes.
And I feel that sometimes what I see coming out of her is like a demonic thing. What happens is, if you ask her who her friend is, you know, and you ask her in a certain way, she'll say, well, my friend is Satan of the Black Mountain.
Mm.
And if my daughter knows how to get her going and just get crazy. And I just wonder sometimes if...
Has she always been like this?
Well, not from the start of my marriage to my husband. See, he told me, he said, she's evil. And
well,
she has evil ways about her.
Has she always been retarded?
As far as he knows, she was born that way. And she's got, like, the mentality of a 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what the doctors have said. Now, I've seen her as normal as you and I. I mean, I don't know how you are, but I mean...
Yeah, you can presume we're normal.
My daughter pretends to vomit, and she'll just go off.
Yes,
and I'll tell her, I'll say, will you stop? You know, just sit there and stay calm. Ignore her,
yeah.
you know, if
yeah.
you can't do it.
Doctor,
yeah.
it brings up an awfully good question. A retarded child, is that an easier target for possession?
No. It's not. It's not. There has to be collaboration of the will for possession.
Doctor, I wonder how many people in mental institutions all across this country, instead of being mentally ill, may be possessed.
I've only gone through, with a psychiatrist, I've only gone through two mental institutions, let's call them that.
Yes, sir.
And over 50% are obviously possessed in those two places.
So then even in the case of a child like this lady's child, you would recommend, based on what you heard, that perhaps she see somebody like yourself?
Yes, somebody in authority to do something about it. But it's very hard to judge a case like this at this distance. But from what she says, it looks like that.
All right, ma'am.
It looks like she could be possessed.
It could be that she could be infested, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I've talked to a priest. Yeah, I'm Catholic.
Yep.
And I've talked to a priest, and they think I'm crazy. What I see is I can't get her to open up or to be this way in front of anybody. But it's like the sheep that is the wolf that's under the sheepskin.
Yeah, I know. And you're being very much more accurate than you know in describing it. You must find a good priest.
And I've talked to priests that say that they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Of course not. They're afraid of their pants.
And they
is that most priests, doctor, or a majority of them?
Unfortunately, today, a majority. Because, you see, now when they're training in seminaries, they're not given any formation whatever. They're given no formation, no theological formation, and no instruction. And then a lot of them, a lot of the professors in seminaries, a lot of the trainers, a lot of the bishops don't believe in the devil.
How?
And that's great PR for him, because it means, as you know, during the war, the successful spy was the one nobody knew was a spy.
Well, how can, a dumb question from layman, how can a priest believe in the Almighty and not the other force? I mean,
because actually, Art, it's a very telling question, and it's an intelligent question, because overall their faith has weakened. I said before to you, it's a dimension. It's not a quantum. It's a dimension. And overall it has, and I have done this. I've probed people who don't believe in this, and I find that their belief in the resurrection of Christ Jesus, their belief in heaven, their belief in hell is all shaken to bits. Sometimes non-existent.
Can I ask you about a very sensitive question again?
Sure.
Regarding the fallibility of priests? In America, in the church, there have been too many stories, doctor, of priests after their vows of celibacy who have then...
Pedophilia.
Yes.
There have. But there's no doubt about it. There is a plague of pedophilia. Now, by the way, look, Art, there are 55,000 priests in the dioceses of America. And of that amount of 55,000, about approximately 2-4% have been found guilty of pedophilia,
yes.
have been pedophiliacs. It's still too much. And there's no doubt about it, there's been a plague, and it's been worsened because of the policy of bishops to cover things up. Whereas, if you find a pedophiliac, priest or layman, you go to the nearest precinct and report it, in my book.
Yes.
But they didn't do that, they covered it up. And they transferred the man to another parish with more little boys and little girls to be violated. And therefore they have had a very severe amount of trouble. And by the way, since 1985, the church in America has spent well over $500 or $600 million in out-of-court settlements.
Oh, my.
And that's the money and the dimes and the nickels of the faithful.
Is it, doctor, because of the church's attitude about it? In other words, they feel that there's been a breach of faith and they want to work on that breach of faith instead of letting it become a civil matter? Or is it just a plain old cover-up?
No, Art, it's more complicated than that. There isn't the network of homosexual priests. We know that now. Unfortunately, there is a network, and they cover for each other. So that's a complicating factor. It's not a wide network, but it does exist, number one. Number two, as you know, for any ecclesiastic in the Catholic Church, there are only two evils, bankruptcy or moral scandal.
Yes.
These are two things they're afraid of.
Yes.
They're not afraid of anything else. And therefore they try and cover anything up which is like, which breathes scandal, because that destroys prestige and finally stops money, stops people contributing.
What are your feelings about vows of celibacy?
I'll tell you something. My experience is as follows, whether as a chaplain in the U.S. Air Force, which I was, or as a parish priest, which I have functioned as, and as a priest now dealing with people, there's no doubt about it that a priest who is a celibate, a real celibate, not just a eunuch, you know...
A real celibate, yes.
Many who take the vow of celibacy are really eunuchs. Somebody has put a chastity belt on them and thrown away the key, and they're looking for the key. And sometimes they find it to be rude and lewd about it. But genuine celibacy makes you so specialized that people can confide in you.
Yes.
And they know you belong to them and them alone. And they know you're not going home at night to your wife. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you're not sharing anything with anybody, your heart. Your heart belongs to Christ as a celibate, if you're truly a celibate. But celibacy is it's a gift, by the way. And it's a rare thing, the practice of celibacy. There are a lot of celibates who take that vow. But the practice of celibacy does make a man very special, because he's uniquely devoted. And by the way, I don't know if you've found this out, but the biggest psychiatrists I know, the biggest surgeons, they're practically celibate.
Yes.
They really are.
But there's a price, and that...
There's a huge price. There's no doubt about it. And if that's where pure good celibacy comes in. If you are really a celibate, you don't dry up like a fig and become hard and emotionless and insensitive to human feeling. Do you understand me?
Yes.
It's such a difficult thing to attain. But if you do attain it, boy, people find it so useful, so practical, so helpful.
And some of those who don't end up perhaps as pedophiles or other...
That's right. And as abrasive characters, because they're frustrated beyond belief.
All right. You answered that in a very straightforward way. Doctor, stand by. We'll be back to you shortly. Dr. Malachi Martin is in Manhattan. Wherever you are, don't move. We'll be right back. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and this is CBC.